Why are smart businesses graduating to NetSuite by Oracle? Because NetSuite eliminates the expense of multiple business systems by consolidating your operations together into one. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. NetSuite reduces IT costs because it lives in the cloud with no hardware required, so you can access it from anywhere. You cut the cost and headaches of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. Bringing all your major business processes into one platform improves efficiency, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move, so do the math. You'll see how you'll profit with NetSuite too. And now, by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Just go to netsuite.com/podcast25 for more information. That's netsuite.com/podcast25.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. In fact, Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/podcastfree. All lowercase, shopify.com/podcastfree, shopify.com/podcastfree.
This on? Hello?
We're all science people.
Science? Exactly.
We know it's a good idea because it's lasted.
There's chemistry in here. There's biology in here.
It's in whiskey. It's in ice cream. It's in who you fall in love with.
Rules.
And ethics. And everything else.
We can make the world better for everybody.
Starting now.
Welcome to Science Rules. I'm your host, Bill Nye. This is the show where science rules. It's a call-in show, so if you want to be on the show, and I hope you do, please go to askbillnye.com and type on in. I want to hear what's on your mind. I want you to call me. We will do our best to use science to help you work it out. And I am joined, of course, once again, by science writer, editor, and dear friend, Corey S. Powell. Greetings once again, Corey.
Bill. It's great to be here.
Every day I hear about artificial intelligence. In fact, it's so prevalent, we don't even have time for all those syllables. We just say AI. AI is going to take over the world. AI this, AI that. Man versus woman versus AI. So will it take over the world? And if so, how will the world look afterwards? And does an artificial intelligence system, which we created, we presume some programmers, some code writers, created an artificial intelligence system, does it perceive the world the same way we do when it takes over? Will we have any role in the future here on the planet whence we are native? Well, to discuss this, we are joined today by Ashley Lawrence, Chief of the Intelligence System Center at Johns Hopkins Applied Physics Lab, APL as we call it, in our own beloved Laurel, Maryland, here in the United States. Greetings, Ashley.
Greetings, Bill.
Thank you for taking the time to come in. Now, I walk around the world, minding my own business. Everybody is talking about AI, AI this, AI that. We're going to use AI. AI is dangerous. AI is genius. What is artificial intelligence?
Yeah, it is interesting. I mean, we have big hopes and dreams for this thing called AI. Maybe backing up from the A for a minute, like what do we think about as intelligence? I like this definition by a gentleman named Max Tegmark, who's a physicist at MIT, and he talks about intelligence as the ability to accomplish complex goals.
What's complex?
So it could be, you know, sometimes they talk about, you know, the machine that collects stamps, and maybe the complexity is in the world, you know, which it has to navigate to get those stamps, right? So it could be a simple goal or it could be a complex goal, but the world is complex. And so that really imposes that, the difficulty there. And so you could think of humans as pursuing goals, right? So we've evolved to use these brains we've got to stay alive long enough to procreate and have a little bit of fun along the way. And that's kind of how we use our intelligence, right? And so you could think about now machines. What kind of capabilities would we need to give to machines to be able to pursue goals on our behalf? And I always like to talk about comic books or popular culture to kind of talk about what those capabilities might be, all right? Any fans of the Marvel movies? You guys follow the Marvel movies at all?
Yeah, but keep in mind, I'm of certain age. I got acquainted with Spider-Man and the Hulk through a print medium.
What?
Yeah. But yes, I'm familiar with the movies. Take it, Ashley.
All right. Well, and for the record, I have a paper copy of the Infinity War from way back in the day. So I remember the paper copies as well. So we're talking about, you know, intelligence as the ability of machines to accomplish goals in a complex world. And, you know, maybe Marvel can give us some insight. So at APL, we talk about machines being able to perceive and understand the world, to make decisions about how to act, to pursue goals, to carry them out in a physical complex world, and to do so as part of a team. So think about this notion of perception. All right, Jarvis, right?
Jarvis.
So Jarvis, when Tony's in the suit, is a perception agent for him, right? So he's got sensors. Jarvis has sensors. He's interpreting all that.
We're talking about Tony Stark and the Iron Man movies. For those coming
or
in late.
Or the Iron Man comic books.
People. Or the comic books.
Yeah, crying out loud.
So Jarvis is sort of seeing the world in ways that Tony can't. Jarvis is connected to, you know, the internet and all the knowledge, you know, the sum of human knowledge. And he's interpreting all that to help Tony in that situation that Tony finds himself in. So Jarvis is perceiving and understanding the world. So in order to pursue goals on our behalf, machines have to be able to see and understand, perceive and understand the world. So now that you've got some understanding of the world, right, you have to actually be able to decide on what to do about those goals. Right? How do I change the world in some way to make them more consistent with my goals? So we call this decision making, right? Now, I like to talk about the complexity of this. If you think about, there's a scene in Infinity War when Doctor Strange, we're moving on this Marvel thing, right?
Yeah.
There's a scene in Infinity War when Doctor Strange is sort of hovering in the air and his head is sort of moving around. And then he says to Tony, you know, I looked at 14 million different possibilities and we went in one. Right. So this notion of decision making is about, you know, predicting how actions will play out in the future to be able to use your intelligence to pursue those goals. But you know what? He says 14 million. And my response to that was, that's it.
Yeah.
Only 14 million. I mean, if you look at, you know, the game of Go, for example, really complex game, they talk about there's more pathways through the game as you and I make choices as opposing players than there are atoms in the observable universe, a really
Whoa,
big number.
Dude.
It's for effect, right? But I mean, I think it'd be 10 to a much greater exponent. And so you got perceive, decide, and then you got act. So now let's talk about vision. Right? Vision is a sort of robot. You know, he's the embodiment of Jarvis. You know, he sort of created, it's a sort of robot. And what I'm always fascinated by is when we look at robots in our popular culture, they just navigate the world with ease. You know, whether it's Jarvis as Vision, or whether it's Baymax in Big Hero 6, you know, there's this scene in Big Hero 6 where Baymax inflates in the bedroom and he's this big lumbering thing and there's these tiny narrow passageways and he's sort of scooting through. That's actually really difficult for a robot. And so robots aren't really there yet. If there was a couple of years ago when DARPA held a robotics challenge, and there's a really awesome bloopers video from that challenge online. So
DARPA's Defense Applied Research
Advanced Research
Program
Projects?
Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency.
There we go. There
Your tax dollars at work.
See, I get fired if I don't know how to, if I okay. know what that acronym
Well, we
stands
for. Don't want you to get fired.
Okay. Well, so hold on. You're getting to one of my biggest questions about AI, which is one day I read an AI taught itself to play Go and became the greatest Go player in the world. And then the next day I see this robot with AI managed to stand and take a step and everybody's saying, wow, this is such an advance. So why is we have these programs that can play Go and they can play chess and they can play Jeopardy and they can defeat the greatest human mind, but they can't like walk around through a kitchen?
Yeah, that's interesting. So I think there's a lot about our human intelligence that we take for granted. This is actually a really difficult challenge. I have to have, in order to navigate the world, a model of myself and my geometry.
In your brain.
In my brain, right?
A mathematical model.
Yeah.
And this big, my arm can reach this far.
Yes. So there's a, you know, they call kinematic model, which is kind of the geometry of myself, my body. There's a dynamics model where if I sort of actuate my joints in this way, it results in these sorts of activities. And so all that's sort of happening under the hood. and humans. And so it's a lot of work to make all that happen under the hood and robots.
Under the bonnet, if you're under a British listener.
Yeah, so a lot of that happens just naturally for us. And it can be really challenging to get robots to do that, you know, especially when situations are unexpected. So you've got the Boston Dynamics robot that can do backflips and sort of in those conditions. But now if you take that robot and you put it in unexpected conditions, put it in the jungle or something, right, can it still do those backflips in a new situation?
A pothole,
exactly.
A curb.
Exactly. Yeah. All the variation of the world. We talked about the world being complex, and so even trying to do something simple in a complex world can be a challenge.
This is why we don't have driverless cars running around just yet.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. It's because of all the unexpected situations that they may find themselves in. And the difficulty of thinking about that teaming relationship between the human and the driver, right?
Between the human and the car.
Yes, between the human and the car. So even if you could make the car smart enough to know when it was in a situation where it shouldn't be driving, could you guarantee that the person is ready for the control to be transferred back at that time? Isn't the whole point that the car is going to drive itself and I can focus on other things to some degree? Will I be ready when it says take the steering wheel?
Well, look, Ashley, you know, this is a call-in show.
Oh, it's definitely a call-in show.
And so this is where we really get the conversations directed by the people who want to, by our listeners, our fans. So who's on the line, Corey?
We have Taylor on the line. Taylor, are you there?
And where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Ontario, Canada.
There you go. And what's your question?
Well, before I got into my question, I just want to do a brief thank you. I wanted to say that the Science Guy sparked my interest and desire to learn about the world and natural phenomena in general. And not only have you provided me and my peers with a passion for science, as they grow into adulthood, you remain a bastion of reason in this staunchly anti-intellectual society.
Right,
so thank
on.
Thank you for everything that you have done and continue to do.
Thank you. So you're in Ontario. Did you watch it on the Crawl Space? TV Ontario?
Well, I actually watched it in my classroom a lot. It was like an excuse to get out of
I know. I've taught countless science classes electronically.
Yeah,
so thank you. But do you have a question?
Yes, I do. So I'll get into it. Since AI and machine learning have become so much deeper and over the past decade have kind of exploded, I wanted to know if it was possible to have an AI learn a multitude of languages and their nuances and adapt the AI to become an instant and accurate translator or interpreter.
That would be cool. Well, you speak English and it comes out in Russian.
Exactly. Precisely.
Right. This is like the Star Trek Universal Translator. Is that a real possibility? Is that something that an AI could do?
I think that's a real possibility. That seems to me like something we'll see within the next decade or so. I mean, you're already seeing pretty amazing translation abilities. You know, you put a string of text in one language, you get a string of text out in another language. A string of sounds, you know, a sequence of sounds or words in one language, getting it out in another. So we're actually seeing that sort of, you know, transcription from speech to text, text to speech, translation. We're seeing a lot of progress in that from machine learning. Deep learning, things like recurrent neural networks applied to those kinds of
things like recurrent neural networks.
Yeah, you just dropped a couple terms there that I'd like to dig into.
So hang on. To Taylor's question, this is a great question, Taylor, I think. Fantastic question. So if I understand this, if you're going to make a translator, an audio translator, where someone speaks in one language, it comes out for somebody else in another language automatically, including to Taylor's point, with the nuances, with the little subtleties that really give the real communication, give communication its true meaning. All right, so this is going to require a machine interacting with a fluent person. Is that right? Now, will that fluent person have to be fluent in both languages in order for the machine to get the right answer?
I think you're onto something there. So first of all, I think that the degree of nuance is really the dial we have here. So
there's degrees. So
if you don't require as much nuance, that's easier. The more nuance and subtlety you require of the machine, the more that time horizon for making this happen pushes out farther. So you can think about, you know, a degree of complexity there.
I think about texts.
Yeah.
Sometimes texts convey all you really need to say. Other times, why did you send me that, man? You suck. Well, you don't mean that.
Yeah.
So
But you're right. I mean, you would have to have, in a sense, training data for the machine.
This is what you're talking about when you're talking about deep learning?
Deep learning?
Right, right. But just to finish the thought on the nuance, I think you would have to have nuanced translations of things for the machine to learn from, right? But now let's talk about what machine learning is, and that'll get to your question about deep learning. All right, so machine learning, typically, we've been programming computers for many years. I had programming the turtle in elementary school as a way to learn programming, right? Go 5 steps forward, 2 steps to the left. So you can program machines very precisely. But I think in recent decades, we've sort of understood the limitations of that. It's not possible to send a really, really complex machine out in the world, all that uncertainty, following a really precise program. That's where you get machines that are really brittle and they break in the face of the real world.
And we make fun of them.
They're fun to make fun of. Machine learning is all about basically allowing a machine to program itself, to reprogram itself from data and experience and to learn and improve over time. So instead of me precisely programming it, I'm basically saying, here's an input and here's what a good output looks like. Here's some pixels in a camera image or something like that, and here's the label of an object that's present in that. You learn for yourself how to translate those pixels into the name of an object, for example, right? And so what happens inside that box, that's a function that now the machine's going to learn instead of a function that a human's going to program very precisely.
All right, so I speak in one language, and the machine doesn't have the other end to compare when we're translating into, what did I say, Russian.
So this is the difference between in machine learning, we talk about training and test. In training, we give it the answers, just like you would a person. This is an input, and this is a correct output. And you give it like millions of those, right? And now in test time, when you deploy the system, now it's going to have, an input, and it has to guess or predict the output. So when it's on your hip and it's the universal translator, test time, training time's over, it's test time, I'm going to give you a bunch of questions and you have to figure out the answers for yourself.
And so either the Russian speaker is going to smile and thank me or just haul off and slug me, depending on how that translation.
Yeah, if you wind up in a cold Russian prison, then you know something went wrong.
We have a prospective customer on the line. So Taylor, what do you want your translator to do? What made you ask this question?
I'm a linguistics student. I've studied at Queen's University in Ontario. So.
And you're as a Canadian, you're bilingual. I imagine, yeah.
Precisely. My mom is French-Canadian and my dad's Croatian and I speak English, so it's a whole melting pot here.
So do you speak 3 languages then well?
2 languages pretty well. The third is not so much, just because the Croatian isn't as prevalent in my life as it used to be. So, to answer your question, though, about as a prospective customer, I think the main thing is bridging that gap in how it sounds so robotic. Like if you use like a Google Translate, for example, right now, the stuff that you receive on the other end just doesn't feel very good. Like even reading it in another language, you're just like, I get what you're saying, but that's not how you say it. Like it's almost the case in every language. It's getting better and better every day, but that little bit of difference, that little bit of human.
The nuance.
I guess. Exactly.
Nuance.
I feel like that could be bridged with like an iterative process, like you were saying, like a machine learning.
So are you looking for a job, Taylor? Is that what you're saying here?
Well, currently I'm between jobs. So.
This is a great question, man. Thank you for asking. This is the perfect question, like where you're a human and you can tell the difference between what you really want it to say and what it's saying. You could, as a human, that's nuance is the issue that makes everybody crazy.
Stick around for more science rules after this.
The Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. In fact, Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/podcastfree. All lowercase, shopify.com/podcastfree, shopify.com/podcastfree.
Why are smart businesses graduating to NetSuite by Oracle? Because NetSuite eliminates the expense of multiple business systems by consolidating your operations together into one. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. NetSuite reduces IT costs because it lives in the cloud with no hardware required, so you can access it from anywhere. You cut the cost and headaches of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. Bringing all your major business processes into one platform improves efficiency, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move, so do the math. You'll see how you'll profit with NetSuite too. And now, by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Just go to netsuite.com/podcast25 for more information. That's netsuite.com/podcast25.
Science Rules is back.
So this is a fascinating field you're in. I want to know how you ended up here.
I really found my way into this field by accident. Being a kid from, the South Side in the South Suburbs of Chicago, I always had a fascination with science and just how the world worked. I watched Bill Nye on TV.
I love you, man.
Bill.
It's none of my biz, but how old are you?
I'm 40.
You're 40? And you used to watch the show?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
And you look amazing for 40, let me just say.
You look pretty good.
Yeah. Well, hey, thank you. And you know what? This is a podcast, so your users cannot verify this information.
Exactly.
So let's just go with
yes.
that.
Yes.
I wound up in the field by accident. As much as I kind of had a fascination for how the world worked, and that drew me to science and engineering, I was also sort of drawn to hip-hop. And when I looked at the two things, I saw people that were like me in one, and I saw a field with people that were not like me in the
You're
other.
You're talking about your skin color, your ancestry, and
being a young black kid, right? So in some ways, I kind of thought, well, maybe institutions are not the best way for me to pursue my goals, right? So, my interest in science and engineering carried me through a degree, and I showed up at Johns Hopkins Applied Physics Lab, again,
What do you mean it carried you? Some reason you applied to college and you did well enough in science to get to go to Applied Physics Lab. What the hell? What do you mean?
Yeah, I skipped over a few steps there.
Yeah.
But yeah, so both of my parents were teachers. My dad went to the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. Mm-hmm. I went there as well. Academics were emphasized. I was good at academics. It's a challenging engineering curriculum there. I made it through that.
Your branch?
Electrical and computer engineering, signal processing.
I'm mechanical.
Okay.
And if I had it to do again, I think I would maybe get into antennas.
Okay. But I never really knew what being a professional engineer really meant when I considered the kinds of institutions that I would be at, pursuing a career in engineering. Again, I just, for somebody that's sort of from my background and kind of more on the creative side, I just didn't see it being a fit. So I showed up at the Applied Physics Laboratory.
Engineering's very creative, people. You make stuff.
Exactly, and that's what I discovered. But my plan on day one was to stay there for 1 or 2 years, fund my record label.
Fund your record label.
Yes, and then go off and be a hip-hop artist.
So what happened?
Well, the reality is when I got there, I had more fun than I thought I would have. I've discovered a discipline that was fundamentally creative, taking all the great knowledge being generated in the different fields within science and turning those into technologies to improve lives. I mean, that's kind of how I see the field of engineering. It requires a lot of creativity. And at the same time, I sort of discovered AI through machine learning. So I started working on building underwater robots.
With the green lasers to find their way around or something?
Well, so you can use lasers underwater, but more often you'll use sound. Because sound travels much better underwater than
so
light
like
does.
Pinging with sonar.
Exactly, or listening with sonar. And so different than in the air, or in space, you know, all of the situational awareness for something under the water comes from sound, or the vast majority of it. So you're making the robots see with sound. So I, you know, I kind of got into that and thought it was really interesting.
And what about your hip hop career?
I was doing that too. So let me give you a sense for some of those years, right? So I would take a 4-day weekend. I'd be working on machine learning, you know, on Wednesday evening. Thursday, I get on the plane, and this is a real trip. I went to Amsterdam. I did a show. I did a record signing at Fat Beats Record because I was still putting out records. I came back, and then Tuesday, I was back working on support vector machines again.
So Fat Beat Records, that was you?
Fat Beats.
Okay, so can you lay down some Fat Beats for us? Can you give us a brief track?
Okay.
What was your hip-hop stage name?
Solstice.
Solstice. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Like June 21st.
Yeah.
Or December 21st.
Or December 21st.
Were you a summer solstice or a winter solstice kind of guy?
I don't think I thought about it that
okay.
much. Okay.
Because
I spelled his soul like...
Oh, your solstice.
S-O-U-L. Yeah,
yep, got it.
All right. So here's an example of a verse from one of my albums. Solstice, I'm rock solid to the core. Hit you with the raw so hard, you'll holler at the floor. Advanced planning, we ain't gotta stop you at the door, dog. The booth will explode soon as you hop in to record. I hold my own back down, blast nouns and spray. Paid dues yesterday, ain't gotta back down today. You got no background, background your way. That's why you already lost soon as you sat down to play. It's do or die, tactics invisible to the human eye. O'Hare from BWI and then cruise the shy. Y'all the cats, they pull it shooting and pull aside. We the type of cats that's bulletproof when the bullets fly. I'm Genghis Khan, way beyond playing pawn. I got the world in my palm and a girl on my arm. Solstice, stay blazing, never settle for warm. We several levels beyond whatever level you on. Come on.
Woo!
All right.
That was so awesome. So reference to the BWI and O'Hare Airport.
Yeah.
So and you decided to stay at work?
I decided to do both. So I released 5 studio albums. I've toured in Europe and Japan. I'm a member of the Recording Academy and vote on the Grammys every year. I've been to the Grammys a few times. That's I just great. Decided to do both.
That's great. So I can find you like on Spotify and other
you
things?
You can. Spotify.
Look for Solstice and
yeah,
there you are.
Yeah. Now, look, I don't do it. I'm not as active as I used to be, but that's primarily because I had kids. And I kind of made the choice to start a family. And I've advanced in my career in engineering. So it's not so much that I punch in at 8, punch out at 9. Or, you know, taking the 4-day weekends. Now I take a day off to come talk to Bill Nye in New
Thank
York
you. Thank you.
versus well, going well, to do a show in Amsterdam.
Does having kids, has that affected the way you think about AI and where you want to go with it?
We were talking about driverless cars earlier, and it's a great litmus test to think, you know, could I ever see myself putting my 2 kids in the back of a driverless car, walking away from that car, and then, you know, sending it to bring them to school? It makes it real, right? When you think about safety, when you think about ethical situations and dilemmas, when you think about how you take this complex artificial reasoning system and make it work in a way that's safe under all these unknown, unexpected, uncertain conditions.
I got to think a guy like you would imagine that happening in 20 years without too much trouble. It might be your grandkids.
Yeah.
I think there'll be a time where we'll just say to each other, you let humans drive cars? Like, wow.
Right.
You let people?
Right.
Science Rules will be right back.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. In fact, Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/podcastfree. All lowercase, shopify.com/podcastfree, shopify.com/podcastfree.
You're listening to Science Rules.
We have Ahmed on the line.
And whence are you calling? Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Dubai, from the Emirates, United Arab Emirates.
Oh, that's great. Cool.
Yeah.
So go ahead. What's your question for Ashley?
So here's the question. Since you guys were talking about trusting machines or robots in general, for the sake of human development, is there an area, function, role or industry where we should not allow AI to operate. So they basically don't force us to rely too much on them, forcing us to hinder our own learning and development.
Legally barring artificial intelligence systems from something. Is there any? Is there something where
practically or ethically it makes sense not to apply AI and intelligent robotics?
Yeah, that's interesting. Over time, I think there will be fewer and fewer of those areas. In general, I think.
Is there one now?
You think about decisions where there's human life or human health. Decisions where a data set may not tell the whole story, and you really require human reasoning. For example, life or death decisions in healthcare, and think about making life or death decisions autonomously with an algorithm according to actuarial tables or something, right? Mm-hmm. Somehow it feels like that's the right space for human reasoning and ethics to sort of still, reign supreme. Or
yeah, we've always got to think it was a miracle that he lived through it, whereas a machine might just let the guy die.
Yeah, exactly.
I paraphrase. Yeah.
Exactly. So, but I think there's an interesting nuance in the caller's question, and this is this notion of the atrophy of human skills over time.
Atrophy of human skills.
Yeah. I mean, so it may be that there's a lot that robots can do or machines can do better than us over time, but the question is, do we want to not allow that, at least during human development?
This is Ahmed's question.
This is his question, right? So I think, like, for example, I took martial arts when I was a kid. I've never used it, right? Like, I've never been in the equivalent of a Bruce Lee kind of a street fight, yet I took it, right?
I'm sorry to hear that.
Right. Yeah, well, so it's atrophied over time. But, I mean, I think during our formative years, there may be a lot that machines could do for us that maybe we shouldn't allow for human development, like driverless cars. Probably we should still do something akin to driver's ed, even though, we may have more competent driverless cars in the future. So I think it's a really insightful question. I think there's a difference, though, between where we want to artificially set machines aside for the purpose of human development versus once we've taken care of that, where we can take advantage of those particular skill sets that AI brings in kind of the operation of the world.
Well, Ahmed, you must have something in mind of something that you want to preserve for yourself where you don't want to allow a machine. What were you thinking of when you were asking this question?
Well, not necessarily I had anything in mind in particular. What I was thinking of that throughout the years, there's like, for example, kids now are teenagers or whether they're in their 20s, they're going back to their school years. Like, I didn't really learn anything from trigonometry because they didn't get into science. So if, for example, like in 10, 20 years, I'm getting my iJarvis from Apple and it breaks, no one on the planet will have the ability to actually fix it other than the AIs or the robots working in the factories that Apple owns. So there's going to come a point in time where we won't be able to fix the things that we're actually using or depending on.
Right. This idea that we might end up in kind of a black box society where stuff happens for us and we have no idea how.
Yeah. I think fewer and fewer people will need those really low-level skills, but we'll still need those people to fix the machines. And so I think there will be in the foreseeable future.
You're just trying to make him feel better.
No, I think that's true. I don't think machines right now can bootstrap themselves in this way.
Well, so this gets in. Ahmed, this is a great question. Thank you very much for calling. But I want to take it one more click. All right. So what seems to me makes a human different to Ahmed's thing about what would you not permit a human to do versus a machine is humans have a desire to make art, especially. Now, that could come from our obsession with sex, that's trying to make kids and what have you, is we have a motivation to make the world better, a motivation to affect change. Maybe sometimes, I guess, for the worse, people want to smash stuff. But are there going to be machines that have that motivation? Where does that come from?
Yeah, the motivation part is tough. I do think, as you say, as humans, we have sort of fundamental drives. You know, it's interesting. I mean, think about the differences between human intelligence and artificial intelligence, right? So human intelligence is the product of evolution.
HI, we call it.
HI is the product of evolution. AI is the product of HI.
That's right.
Right? Yeah. So if you're an evolution, a person that leans towards this, way of understanding how we got here, which I do, then all these drives are sort of useful for something, you know, staying alive, procreating, and maybe having, you know, entertainment is a byproduct of that.
Shelter, food,
yeah,
keeping warm.
Exactly. But so in my view, then these things must have been useful for something in the context of those human goals. So our goals are inherited, and I think we're still trying to, from this process of evolution, and I think we're still trying to understand the kind of the nature of our own intelligence. Now,
So let me ask you, this is a very topical issue that you're touching on, this question of embedded bias, where, you know, the human intelligence, you know, we're creating this artificial intelligence with this idea that it somehow seems more objective, but we're the ones creating it, and we're putting our own expectations and biases into it. And so you see things like, you know, facial profiling or biometrics that are designed around, you know, the kinds of faces of the people who write the software, or, you know, how do we make sure that we're not creating this artificial intelligence that just basically like recreates all the problems and the bad things we're already doing, only now we kind of institutionalize it and kind of embed it in our world.
We don't realize that we're doing it.
It's a
Yeah. Basically, you have these algorithms on YouTube that are sort of leading people to Nazi videos, and people get upset about that. But it's a deep problem.
It is.
How do you deal with it?
Yeah. Well, it's a fantastic question, and I think.
Thank you.
Well, yeah, I think that the first thing we have to do is come to terms with the fact that people have these biases. We have to confront our biases and call them out, and not in a way that is necessarily fundamentally judgmental, because I don't think that bias is fundamentally bad. It just is what it is. And when it comes to a certain kind of decision-making—
Like you're biased toward better-tasting food.
Exactly.
It's a useful bias. Life.
The question is what are the set of biases at play? And are they useful for this particular decision-making, right? So, like you said, I'm biased towards better-tasting food. That's going to help me not get poisoned or something like that. On the other hand, if you look at, let's say a computer vision algorithm that's been trained, you know, I set up a camera, and everybody that passes by the camera forms, the training set for the machine learning algorithm. And it just so happened that I put it in a certain neighborhood where everyone had light skin. And now I'm going to put this into a car, right? It's going to be the vision algorithm for a car, and I send it into a neighborhood where most people have dark skin. Well, the performance is going to be different. There's an inherent bias just in the data. So the question is, you know, how do we, as we train computers, how do we recognize which biases are present and control for them? And it gets at a kind of one click deeper. It gets to understanding the cause and effect relationships. You know, right now, machine learning is a lot about pattern recognition, correlation. When I see these kinds of things, that typically means these other kinds of things.
So pattern recognition is different from cause and effect recognition.
Absolutely. It's fundamentally different.
That's cool. All right. So the Turing test, how do we tell a machine from a human, right? This is Alan Turing, the guy who invented a way to break the Enigma code and some crazy, amazing idea.
And a pioneer in artificial intelligence.
Yeah. How am I going to be able to tell if the machine produces the right outcome? How am I going to be able to tell that it did it by reasoning, artificial reasoning, or it did it by top-down programming?
So this is
pattern recognition.
So on one level, if it did the right thing, don't look a gift horse in the mouth. Maybe that's good enough. But you know, one level deeper than that, though, there is this notion of this word explainability that's in AI, and this idea that somehow we would like to open, you know, look under the covers and kind of understand why
under the bonnet.
Yeah, under the bonnet. Thank you. Understand why a machine makes the decision it does. With an explicitly programmed machine, this is very easy. I set a breakpoint in the code. I inspect the variables at that point. I can kind of understand. When we have machine learning algorithms, where machines are kind of learning for themselves, you know, functions that translate inputs to desired outputs, and there's these complex networks, whether it's a neural network or some other kind of machine learning algorithm, it can be a lot harder because the machine has programmed itself in a way that kind of by construction is not the way that I would have programmed it, or else I would have just done so.
Yeah.
And so it's a real question. I think we're really searching for the answer as we try to get to a point of explainability in these really powerful machine learning algorithms.
Okay. And Bill, we have another caller on the line.
That ties right into this.
Here's hoping. Let's find out.
John, you're out there.
Hi.
Where are you calling from?
I'm from Dallas, Texas.
There you go, in the United States. What's your question for Ashley Lawrence?
So really quick, I just wanted to say, Bill, even though I'm only 19 years old, you were one of my biggest influences to pursue a career in science.
Right on.
And I'm a sophomore at Baylor University.
Oh, cool.
Oh,
what are you studying?
I'm majoring in environmental science.
Oh, right on. Cool. Well, we need you.
Yeah, I always hear you talking about how important it is to have, you know, younger generations pursuing science.
That's it.
And I greatly respect your advocacy and your urge to educate climate change.
Thank you, man. But all that aside, no, that's great. But do you have an artificial intelligence related question? I believe you do.
I do. So, although AI offers countless benefits, you know, in medicine and engineering and agriculture and just everyday life, I'm sure as you guys know, humans have a tendency to use the advancements in science for warfare. And so is there a real threat of developing super intelligent AI that poses a serious military threat, unlike, you know, what we've ever seen before?
Okay. Before we even begin, Ashley, I don't know what you do at the Applied Physics Lab, but I know 3/4 of the budget just sort of disappears.
It comes from government grants.
Yeah. They're quotation marks. But I can tell you, John, there's a lot of artificial intelligence in military systems as it is. So take it, Ashley. Should we be terrified?
Right. So as you point out, at the Applied Physics Lab, a lot of the research that we do is in the service of national security.
Research. That's
what they call it. Research and development. Research. National security, space exploration, and health. So that's kind of what we do at the lab. As you point out, I mean, it's like saying, man, I wonder what would happen if physics ever got in the hands of the military. Wonder what they would do with calculus, right? I mean, in some sense, it's kind of becoming ubiquitous. It's just, you know, machine learning is becoming the way we do computer programming in some sense, you know, and it's everything from, you know, a system that has a perception capability, you know, a logistics kind of a system where a driverless car can deliver a resupply, you know, to a...
Like the just-in-time in a car assembly line.
Yeah, exactly. The Amazon last-mile logistics equivalent for, you know, the Army or something.
The red doors show up with the red unibody to make the red car automatically.
Or even to the back office functions. Like, you know, can the DOD, Department of Defense, do its accounting more efficiently? Right?
So it's here's what I think, yeah. John, embellish this if you will, but I think what you're afraid of, John, is that these artificial intelligence systems would have a motivation. They would have a desire.
Right. This is Terminator and Skynet.
Take
and all
over
that.
The world. So are they going to do that, Ashley? Is that what you guys are working on?
Right. So let's get deeper into this question, because I do think it's a really good one. We see, you know, these paradigm shifts, you know, in economic value, in the foundations of national power. We see potential for these paradigm shifts as AI becomes more advanced. And so this is absolutely, as a society, something we should be worried about. Look at what's happened, and I'll get back specifically to the military, but just look at what's happened with Silicon Valley, right? And you look at automation in retail, and you see this paradigm shift that Amazon has ushered in, and now how lopsided the industry is, you know, as a result of it. And so now you're getting, you know, let's say a few tech companies that have, you know, really kind of asymmetrically benefited from these things.
Like, what do you mean? Like, Amazon is benefiting more than brick and mortar stores?
Sure. So there's a whole shift in the economy towards these things. So now you can look at that and say, okay, well, is there something as a society we should do to make sure there's a balance, whether it's economic or whether it's national, you know, military power, et cetera, that's maintained in the face of these asymmetric, you know, paradigm shifts that AI can bring about, you know, as we've seen with Silicon Valley. And I think that we should be concerned with this. As we're developing the acute technologies, I think we have to keep this in mind.
Acute technologies.
Yeah, like a specific system, a vehicle for the Army or, an autonomous plane for the Air Force or something. We have to make sure that that system's used in a way that conforms to some kind of ethics. I think that the nice thing about, you know, the United States is that our military reports to a civilian government. And I think the most important thing people can do is be engaged in this process. As a society, we need to decide what are ethical uses for you know, for AI in the military and in other kinds of industries like health.
But and does that worry you about how other countries might deploy AI then?
It does, right? And so in some sense, I think the strength of our international coalitions are going to have to be brought to bear to make sure that, you know, again, as a for the U.S. as a society, but then also as a species, that we kind of figure out, well, what do we want to do with this stuff? How do we make sure that in the long run, these technologies are really made to serve human society goals?
So, John, you got to vote.
Yes.
Be sure to vote so that artificial intelligence doesn't become motivated to destroy us all.
Right. And
you can do this, man.
And talk to other people to make sure that they're aware of these issues.
Yeah. And so thanks for calling, John. This is you motivated a very important response here. Thank you so much. Corey.
Wait.
What's happening?
It's not raining in the studio, so that must mean it's time for a lightning round.
Yes, that's the sound of thunder, Ashley, means that there's lightning out there.
And now there's lightning in here.
Yes, discharging from the ground to the cloud to the ground. So here, are you ready for the lightning round?
Sure.
What is your favorite Terminator, the movie or the robot?
I mean, like your favorite Terminator movie, your favorite Terminator robot, if you had to pick a Terminator.
I'd pick the very first movie.
All right.
Young Arnold Schwarzenegger,
kicking empanage.
Sarah Connor's like the best part of all those movies. So you got a young Sarah Connor, that's the first one.
Would you pay to hear an AI rapper? Would you pay money to hear an artificial intelligently generated rapper?
At least once.
Just to compare and contrast.
I have to hear it at least once. And if it's bad, you know, then it's like fool me once. But
so you would go. You wouldn't say never.
I would pay for that concert ticket. All right. For sure.
Would you, after you saw an artificial intelligence rapper who was good, would you never see a human again?
What I would really like to see is a combo of a human rapper with an AI DJ. That's what I really want to see.
All right. God, that should be very straightforward over there at my tax
AI
dollars
DJ.
Applied physics lab. Would you accept an artificial intelligence boss?
Yes, if it was competent. to the degree I would accept any human boss. They would need to be competent in both cases.
All right. Well, that's still a ways off. What would you do if you failed a Turing test?
I would celebrate.
Why would you celebrate?
Well, what was my goal in the whole thing?
Yeah, what was your goal?
I think when
Turing test during the lightning round?
I think your goal is to find out if you're human or if the standard for human has kind of AI has driven up the standard and you no longer meet
I would guess that my goal would have been to fail it, and that would have made it a fun thing to do. So I would celebrate having failed. That's probably the reason I would have done it in the first place.
Whoa.
Oh, it's like gaming
meta,
the system.
Yes,
it's
gaming
meta.
The system.
Oh, you want out. You're like, you know what? I'm through with this job. I'm gonna fail the Turing test and go retire.
Yeah, that's right.
Thank you again. What a great discussion this has been. Ashley Lawrence has been our guest. You are, sir, the chief of the Intelligence Systems Center at Johns Hopkins Applied Physics Lab in Laurel, Maryland. This has been a fantastic discussion. Good luck with Solstice Records out there.
Thank you very much. Much appreciated.
So as you may know, I'm Bill Nye.
And I am Corey S. Powell.
And when it comes to the artificially intelligent part of our universe,
science rules.
If you like Science Rules, and I hope you do, please take a moment to rate and review it in Apple Podcasts and on Stitcher. It helps us out. It helps you out. It helps us provide you a better product, and it helps other people learn about the show so they, too, can turn it up loud.
It's a deep learning process, Bill.
Yes! Science Rules is produced by Jordan Bell. Our engineer today is Casey Halford, who also did the mix and the original theme music. Special thanks, of course, to Claire Rawlinson. Chris Bannon is the Chief Content Officer, the CCO here at Stitcher, where science rules.
Stitcher.
Why are smart businesses graduating to NetSuite by Oracle? Because NetSuite eliminates the expense of multiple business systems by consolidating your operations together into one. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system.
bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. NetSuite reduces IT costs because it lives in the cloud with no hardware required, so you can access it from anywhere. You cut the cost and headaches of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. Bringing all your major business processes into one platform improves efficiency, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move, so do the math. You'll see how you'll profit with NetSuite too. And now, by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Just go to netsuite.com/podcast25 for more information. That's netsuite.com/podcast25.